wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
How we doing? What's going on?
I thought that might end.
It didn't.
If you can't tell, everyone listening, this is my first time hosting Dear Science. I was hoping that that would end.
It never does.
No.
What's up, Alan?
Oh, everything's up today. Hey, it's a big day today. It's a big birthday today.
Whose birthday is it?
Whose birthday? Ernest Rutherford.
Damn.
Yes, indeedy. He would have been 151 years old today. But more of that in a minute, because we've got a big announcement to make.
We do. So, Alan, would you like to do the honours?
Oh, my goodness. We have a... drum roll, please. We have a new co-host for Dear Science, who will be starting next week. His name is Joel Rindlaub. He is from University of Auckland. And you might just see him on Celebrity Treasure Island, I believe, which either started or just coming up. So, the only scientist ever to have been on a reality TV show, I believe.
No pressure for the future hosts of
So he'll be kicking off next week and we'll be alternating fortnightly. So, but anyway, back to good old Ernest, because it's his birthday today, August the 30th, 1871, born in Spring Grove, which is a little hamlet just outside Nelson, just south of Nelson. And I think it's worth just talking about him today, because we Kiwis just don't realise how great he was, okay? Mm. And there's a lot we don't know about him, I think. And so he got the Nobel Prize in 1908 for splitting the atom. That's what everyone would know about Rutherford, except he didn't.
Mm.
Okay, so
the drama.
I know.
What a
plot
twist.
So he is known for splitting the atom, but he didn't actually split the atom. But we'll talk more about that in a minute. Just a quick précis of his life. He was, you know, obviously very good at school and stuff like that. And this was back in the days when going to university certainly wasn't common. He was the ducks of his school, and he had to apply for a scholarship twice to get into University of Canterbury, or the University of New Zealand as it was in those days. And so he was very lucky to do that, to get that scholarship. He got really good grades. He matriculated in maths and mathematical physics and physical science. And as a result of that, he then applied to get an 1851 scholarship. And again, he was second choice for that. So whoever beat him to that must have been really good. They turned it down. So he found himself doing a PhD at Cambridge. And all the things that he did, just amazing. So during his PhD, he started off, and remember, radio, what the medium on which we are now, wasn't even invented then. And he developed a forerunner of radio, actually, a detector for electromagnetic radiation. He did that during his PhD, so he sort of nearly beat Marconi to the whole radio thing.
That's crazy.
He developed, or he found X-rays and radioactive rays would make gases conductive, and that was a big thing back in those days. He discovered alpha radiation, beta radiation, and this was all sort of during his PhD and sort of the years after that. He then got an appointment in Canada, went off and became chair of physics at McGill University until 1907. He discovered an element. He discovered radon, which, you know, not many people get to do. There's only 118 elements out there, so he discovered that. The reason he got his Nobel Prize was not for splitting the atom, it was for explaining radioactivity. And radioactivity was only invented only discovered in 1896.
Mm.
And so he was right at the forefront of all of that. So he explained that. He got the Nobel Prize for that. And he got the Nobel Prize in chemistry, which surprised him because he thought he was a physicist. And he said the fastest transformation that he knew of was his from a physicist to a chemist. And he also famously said that all science is either physics or stamp collecting, which I don't know. I think we'll forgive him that one, I think. So he also developed the Geiger counter. You've probably heard of the Geiger counter. That's for measuring radioactivity. He did his gold foil experiment, where he showed how the atom was made and that the atom was mostly empty space. He could have got a Nobel Prize for that as well, because that's our current, well, it's one of the current views of the atom, I guess, or one of our modern views of the atom. Mm. He got knighted in 1914, so Sir Ernest. And then he did his supposed splitting of the atom, which is the exact opposite of what he did. He actually added to the atom, and what he did, he turned nitrogen into oxygen. And he was the first person to change one element into another. And this is alchemy. This is what the alchemists have been trying to do for squillions of years, was turn anything into gold. He managed to change an element into another one. He went to Cambridge in 1919. He had 9 future Nobel laureates working under him. 9, for goodness sake. You know, this guy's an absolute genius. Einstein said he was another Newton. That was, you know, and that's coming from Einstein. And sadly, he died in 1937 after a botched hernia operation, apparently because the local doctor didn't want to touch him because he was a lord. And he was a bit scared to get involved. He thought a higher order doctor should have been in there to give him a hand. And he's immortalized on the periodic table as element 104, as Rutherfordium. So that's a pretty good CV.
That is a life well lived.
Oh, hell yeah. And okay, so here's my proposition. Okay. So we've got Matariki now, the holiday, Matariki.
Yeah.
Now, that's falling close to Queen's birthday, isn't it?
Mm.
Okay, so when good old Queen Elizabeth finally shuffles off this mortal coil, maybe let's, you know, get rid of the Queen's birthday weekend holiday and let's have August the 30th, Rutherford's birthday, as a national holiday. How's that?
That's a good proposition.
Perhaps instead of King Charles, we have Ernest Rutherford on.
There we go. There we go.
At least we're celebrating another fellow Kiwi.
Yeah. Who's yes, indeed, who's not on the other side of the world. Yeah.
Who's revolutionized humankind, I guess.
Absolutely. So a great, great scientist, and his birthday today, and, you know, well worth celebrating.
Right,
so,
well, happy birthday, Ernest. Rest in peace.
The big 151.
The big 151, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, really getting up there. Triple digits. Now, Joe, do you consider smell to be an important thing about other people?
Yes. Well, okay, personally, like, I take the way I smell quite seriously. That's why I have a collection of things like cologne and stuff that I own. So I do, right? I think it is important to smell nice. I try and smell nice, like, whenever I come to the studio. Or at least like 90% of the time.
I have heard some of the news teamers complimenting Joe for your scent. So you're obviously doing something right. But
so yeah, but like, why do you ask?
Yes, Alan, can you tell us a little bit? There's some new research that suggests that people who consider smell and actively smell others may have stronger sexual desires. Can you tell us more?
Well, there you go, Joe. That's it in a nutshell, basically.
Nailed it.
Okay, so there's a new study.
Not to embarrass you, yeah. Sorry, Joe.
You did it very well. That was well led into, yes. So this is a paper that's just been published in a journal called The Archives of Sexual Behaviour. And indeed, as you say, people who consider smell important and who actively sniff other people's odours, I like that phrase, have stronger sexual desire, supposedly. So some workers in China and Germany, what they did was they got a survey of 2,500 students, the majority of whom were in China, some in India and some in the States. And basically they gave them a questionnaire about how important they considered smell and not just other people's smells, so their own smell. So they sort of cut the smells up into 3 sort of sections. The first, whether you smelt yourself and sort of your, should I say, naughty bits, shall we say. And then whether you smelt others' body odours, and then also whether you smelt yourself your common body odors, so things like hands and hair and clothes and stuff like that. And so basically the people were asked to say whether they felt smell important and then to sort of rate their sexual activity, essentially. And so what was found was that women placed a higher value on olfaction, on smell, and women had a higher prevalence of body odor sniffing. Okay, now, and again, what they didn't go into in this paper was was it good smells or bad smells? That was not really made clear. So, you know, that's sort of interesting. And the third thing, women displayed lower levels of sexual motivation than did the men. And in particular, Indian men had the highest sexual desire inventory scores. So what to make of all this? Well, seemingly there's an apparent correlation between how important you find smell and your sexual desire. Now, having had a look at the paper, there's a few graphs in there and stuff with a few straight lines and a whole lot of points all over the show. So I ran this past my colleague in the School of Science at AUT, and he basically said, no, there's no correlation there. It's all pretty much random. But, you know, this stuff has been published. But again, that doesn't mean to say necessarily that it's gospel. So I think the jury's still out on this one. But again, it always amazes me how people come up with some of these topics for study.
Do you think there's a lot of blank spaces to fill? Because, like if anything,
evidently yes.
If anything, like I've heard some people like the natural musk of certain other humans, and others prefer like a cologne smell or a perfume smell. Mm. Like, does it really, like, have they specified? Or,
well, I mean, there's all these things about pheromones, which has been going since, you know, I was a lad, sort of thing, and they go on about pheromones, this and blah 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 blah, and I don't know whether they're really a thing. I'm not sure. But, you know, obviously smell is important to some people. And but how that correlates with their other characteristics, who really knows? So I'm not going to say more research is needed on this, because I'm not really sure that it is. So there you go. Archives of Sexual Behaviour, if you want to check that out. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, text in, let us know.
Absolutely.
All right. And then the last topic we were going to discuss today is about mosquitoes. Mm. And just having a look at this, they seem to be very prepared to attack us.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit more?
The little buggers, okay. So, yeah, they're a pain, aren't they? Now, you might find that you're a mosquito magnet, and you might find that you're not. And again, this all comes back to the whole smell thing. And
oh, no.
Yeah. But it's really rather interesting, because I think I'm correct in saying this, is that we really haven't got the whole taste and smell mechanism sorted out yet. We really are not quite there on knowing exactly certainly how taste works, and probably how smell works as well. Now, what we know is that we have receptors. And in humans, these receptors appear to be specific for specific smells. So basically, you've got a receptor for each particular smell. Therefore, each particular molecule that gives rise to that smell. And then that fires off a neuron, pops into your brain, and you smell that particular smell. So it's a very, very specific process. However, there's a bunch of workers over in the States who've been looking at mosquitoes and trying to figure out how mosquitoes smell us and the sort of processes that go on in mosquito brains. Now, for God's sake, don't ask me how they study mosquito brains, but they do. And what they've found is that, mosquitoes have receptors for, they certainly have receptors, but these receptors are not specific for the one smell, okay? So the human smell, for example, a molecule that we give out is a thing called oct-1-ene-3-ol. Bet you didn't know that.
Did not.
I haven't done science since year 10, so nope.
Same.
Now, that's one particular molecule that humans give out specifically, and another type of molecule that we give out are things called amines, which are molecules that have nitrogen in them. Now, normally, by our understanding of how receptors and everything work, you'd have separate receptors for each of those molecules. Now, mosquitoes apparently don't. Okay, so what they can do, and again, don't ask me how they do it, because it's quite remarkable, they can knock out particular receptors in the mosquito's olfactory system. So
like they need to blank them out completely.
Yeah, basically. So, you know, it's all to do with genetic engineering and stuff like that. So, yeah, I know.
Damn.
But so they knock out the receptor for this particular molecule that they think is going to be used to track humans. And it seems that the other receptors just take that up. So they've sort of got this built-in redundancy in their olfactory system. And basically what that means is that you're not going to get anywhere by trying to breed these mosquitoes which don't have the receptors for a particular molecule, because other ones seem to just sort of take it over and still register in the mosquito's brain. So they know that we're there regardless.
So they actively hunt us, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So and again, it's all to do on smell. So, you know, if you don't exude particular molecules and stuff like that, then you're less likely, presumably, to get bitten by mosquitoes. But, you know, how do you get rid of mosquitoes? They really are pests. But again, they probably serve some purpose. I don't know quite what. But
look more into that, maybe. But
yeah. So there you go. That's the science for the week. All the news that's fit to print. And as I say, next week, look out for Joel. We, you know, we're setting him up here. You know, no pressure.
Yeah, we're really hyping him up, Joel. We're hyping you up, man.
Yes, well, we're very excited for that. I think what we've learned today then is that if you smell good, you might be having a lot of sex, but be getting bitten by a lot of mosquitoes. So it's kind of a win-lose situation, you know.
Either or, potentially both, probably not.
There we go. That's the take-home message. There
thanks
we go.
So much for talking to us today, Alan. It was good. A great time having a chat with you.
Thanks.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.